This is KGVM 95.9 FM, or KGVM.org, the Health and Happiness Show. We're continuing with our series covering the current status of journalism. We have a look at how journalism in smaller communities is faring on this show. Thank you. This is Dr. Arliss Wood with Dr. Suzanne Wood, speech-language pathologist, co-host of our semi-weekly program of Health and Happiness. Although we have an emphasis on content of mental health concerns, anything that's going to help our health and happiness is focused upon. We also thank the Montana Psychological Association Public Education Committee for being the original inspiration of this program. This is KGVM 95.9 or KGVM.org. We have another great program today with a great guest, Dr. Suzanne will introduce.
It was a given. In the morning, you would hear a thump on the porch as the paper boy or girl delivered your news. The paper had everything. It was the source. The latest, solid, and accurate news, the movie times, garage and estate sales, all the sports scores, puzzles, crosswords, and comic strips. The newspaper had something for everyone. And I might say, it still does. But today is by far a different story for our newspapers. It's a sea change. And we have with us a bona fide journalist from the Bozeman Daily Chronicle to speak about the changes. Welcome, Dan Aston.
Hey, yeah, good to be here. Just wanted to clarify real quick. I work for Adams Multimedia, but I'm not a direct employee for the Chronicle. The two main newspapers that I work for are the Livingston Enterprise and the Big Timber Pioneer.
Oh, thank you for clarifying that. I had you with the wrong newspaper, but you are a newspaper man through and through, it sounds like.
That's correct. Yeah, I've been doing this in Montana for 2 years and love every day.
Had you been in Montana before?
No, I went to Yellowstone National Park on a trip when I was a young boy many years ago. But other than that, this is my first time in Montana, and it's been great so far.
Well, welcome. We love having you here. And, of course, these days the world of journalism has truly changed up, and you can be a journalist from anywhere. However, we'd like for you to maybe talk about back when you started and how one prepares to be a journalist and what young people need to know about the field today, just talking first about journalism as a job and as a career.
Sure. Well, I'd say one of the innate qualities that as journalists, most if not all of us share is a natural curiosity. I remember my first doctor's checkup when I was very young. The doctor noted in there, asks a lot of questions in all caps. I've been doing that ever since, and have managed to luckily turn it into a career. So I'd say off the bat, that is the most important attribute. Anyone who has a natural curiosity, who enjoys doing research, meeting new people, and learning new things, this is a great career for them.
I love that. You're not telling people what it is. You're asking them what's going on. Very good. Very good. Well, you had to go to school then to become a journalist. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. I'd say as long as you have an English degree, although a college degree is not necessary, but many people in the field do have them. These days, I have a creative writing degree from Susquehanna University in central Pennsylvania.
Okay, so you would say to young people considering journalism, those who love to ask questions and those who love to write, that you need good basic English skills and that you also need to have a very inquiring spirit.
Yes, that's correct, and I definitely think any kind of English degree would help out with that.
Very good. We have a daughter who actually went to school for writing, not necessarily journalism, but more film work. And so there's a whole group of ways one can gain ease with using the language to make your information known. Yeah. So, Dan, just wondering, have you noticed over the years changes in the newspaper world? And could you kind of give us your historic look back up till now about what you see happening?
Sure. Perhaps anecdotally, I know sometimes people and myself refer to my generation being born in the late 90s as a sort of lost generation, because growing up and in school, we took primarily written tests. We read from books. We developed advanced computer skills compared to other generations. But I do think there are changes in the industry as far as people that might be getting into this 5-10 years from now that did not learn how to read conventionally using books, were primarily learning online, which there's not necessarily anything wrong with that. But then there are issues of, AI and ChatGPT, things like that being used in schools. I'm not sure if those tools necessarily encourage thrift in writing or help with vocabulary skills, grammar, things like that.
Yeah, it's hard work to write, in my estimation, and to be correct, and you have to learn all of that. But if you can push a button and have it done for you, at least you feel that it's done for you, that must be a huge temptation these days.
Yes, it definitely is. It's like I tell people, you wouldn't build a house with a hammer, with only a hammer. I think it's a great tool when used appropriately. For instance, sometimes when we're on a deadline and we have a very short amount of time, if you're just, you can't think of that perfect headline, or you want to do a quick check for grammar, spelling, things like that, AI can be a great tool. I think it becomes very problematic when people try to organically use it to gather information. If you're not careful, it will do things like generate quotes, which come from nowhere. You have to double check any sources that you gather from that and treat it with a grain of salt.
That's so true. In reading up on this topic, the thing that I saw over and over was that AI can be helpful, but you don't always know how correct it is in the information. Generally, it would be, but you can't depend on that. So, and we're like you. We might turn to it to get a quick fix as we're doing a project, but we wouldn't want it to do our work for us. And so I think that's something we should all keep in mind with AI, for people out there, artificial intelligence. And so that is one aspect. Another would be that at one time we didn't have cell phones available and other means, and so the newspaper was our main source. And so now there's so many ways that journalists can work. Are you finding it difficult, the newspaper situation per se, Dan?
I don't believe the concept of a newspaper is necessarily difficult, but I think the writing is on the wall that print news within my career will be diminishing. As far as online news goes, a lot of companies like my own, Adams Multimedia, are increasingly leveraging their stories on an online platform. And I think for small towns like this, that works very well. People log onto their phones, like you were saying, their computer. They can still read a great homebrewed story about people they know, about local issues that are important to them. I think one thing we're finding is that people care what their neighbors are up to a little more than they might care about national or even statewide issues.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm very happy to hear that you're looking toward new ways to do things, because looking at the State of Local News Project, they're saying in their 2022 report that by the end of 2025, we'll have lost one-third of the print newspapers, And since 2005, more than 3,200 print newspapers have vanished. So there is a segue here that we see happening. I will provide full disclosure here that we do and always have subscribed to the local newspaper, and I think that's a valid point. What you're saying is you're finding that people really are interested in local news.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I don't see that necessarily changing anytime soon. The format, I think, might just change.
Yeah. So journalists, per se, even though so many have lost their jobs, I have all kinds of numbers here about the job losses for journalists due to newspapers closing. So what you're saying gives us hope that they're not just out of a job and out of work and out of journalism, that maybe they should just go a different direction.
Yeah, I don't think there's cause to be hopeless necessarily, but it is clear the industry is tightening. People, as far as their roles, are required to do more than in the past. I think now the modern journalists, like myself and a lot of the people on our team, are expected to take many of their own photos, if not all of them, and gather one and two stories almost every day. For instance, the Livingston Enterprise, we have a staff of three, and we manage to print twice weekly and have an online edition every day except for Sundays with a staff of three. You have to be lean and mean in order to do that, and that's what we like to say here.
I love hearing that.
Mm-hmm. Something that's bothered me in recent times, that when I paid more attention to it, is that I read that like for TV stations, the media, and newspapers, and you can clarify what the facts are, but people with great amount of power who have certain biases politically will buy up media. And I'm going, well, you know, there's certain things called confirmation bias that you kind of want the outcome to be what you believe, regardless of the facts. Do you see any problem with, like, multi-billionaires buying up media?
No, I don't necessarily see any problem with that, and I can't say any of my colleagues have seen it in Montana specifically. But one issue I would say is sort of just increasingly it seems like it's become harder to do research as people become more closed off. It can be harder to get a hold of people organically, sources organically, and to gather information on testier, divisive issues that has become a lot more normalized, I think, in recent years. People are more afraid of talking to the press than in the past.
Like politicians, for example?
Yeah. Luckily, the Montana delegation here, I would actually say, is incredibly communicative. But in other states, I think it has become a lot more normalized to release a statement and not necessarily bother to talk to a reporter. I think the flaw there is that you end up with a very one-sided coverage of whatever happens to be going on, and it can actually benefit the politician because, as a reporter, we might notice things that staffers would not, and those can be positive things.
So, people in journalism, hopefully, and I wish that other it was the case, it were the case with others, would learn to be a critical thinker, to try to look for research or information that is not biased or spun in a political way, so that what you present is more of what we would call the truth.
Yeah, that's always the goal. I always like to say that we're observers. We're just boiling it down in a way that's palatable and hopefully a little entertaining, but nonetheless accurate.
I know that a recent issue of the American Psychologist had nine different nations speaking, their psychology experts, about misinformation. And they noted that dubious rhetoric espoused by politicians and other pundits, and often broadcast through mainstream channels, can include outright disinformation, but also misleading arguments, scapegoating, and paltering, which is a way we read that makes something that isn't true seem more true than it is. So they're taking facts that are strictly speaking true, but are decontextualized to promote misleading narratives. And so we all worry that we're being misled. How do you fight against this kind of tumult, Dan?
Well, I think the way to fight against it is kind of what I was harping on earlier. If I were a politician, I know a lot of politicians we work with and talk to do this correctly. I would encourage them to talk to reporters and encourage them to talk to their local news networks, because people that live in these small towns, especially in Montana, are just interested in feeling seen. They want to feel seen by their politicians, by their representatives. They don't necessarily want to see them on some national news network talking about issues that may not even directly affect them. At the end of the day, they want to see their local and state representatives representing that. I'd say as far as misinformation, social media definitely has taken over in recent times, and I think increasingly that's where people want to turn to. But I think if they want accuracy, turning to their local newspaper is a great place to start.
Very good. Very good. Typically, pardon me for saying this, but I don't believe journalists get rich at what they're doing. So they generally, my concept is that they're very, very fervent about loving to write and presenting information in the right way. And so one thing that has a big impact on journalists I've been reading is economy. The economic indicator of the World Press Freedom Index says that as the global state of press freedom is now classified as a difficult situation, and it's declining in many parts of the world, but one factor that's seriously weakening the media is economic pressure. Are you finding it possibly easier to deal with that pressure on the local basis where people are really looking for your news and information, and that maybe that kind of concern is more at the national and international level?
Yeah, I think I think most journalists and a lot of people in my career, when they're in this position, they understand that it's not a get-rich-quick job. It's not a get-rich-quick scheme. You got to do this because you're passionate about it. That being said, I can see how there are issues in general with employment, especially for college jobs, post-collegiate jobs out there. I've seen statistics that pay rates haven't risen since the early 90s, right? And when you're dealing with 4 or 5% inflation, I can totally see how that would be an issue for anybody who is looking for a job after college.
Absolutely. And then there are the newspapers and the layoffs. So we want to encourage people to really... The heroes of our civilization have been the reporters over our years. They're the ones who would bring the truth to light, who would bring truth to power, who would look for the truth and search diligently. It's just been a part of what we believe, that reporters really are heroic figures to most, I think, people who've grown up over the years in the United States seeing this. So it's really of concern when we see that they're being threatened politically or economically. And how would you say people could support journalists?
I'd say to support a journalist, as much as we live in a subscription-heavy society, everything's a subscription from your TV now, things like Netflix, to maybe even your car. But I would say the best thing you can do to support a journalist is to become a subscriber for your local newspaper, to contribute on a regular and periodic basis. It's also the best way to stay informed. A lot of the issues that we cover are week to week. meaning they change over time. So if you pick up a random newspaper at your supermarket, you might not be, that might just be one development in a larger story. So I think really just checking in regularly is not only the best way to stay informed, but the best way to support your newspaper with regular income. I think the more people that do that with something as basic as an online subscription, that will keep their local newspaper alive.
I'd like to say, along the lines of what we were talking about earlier, like press freedom, perhaps the audience knows this, and perhaps many of them don't, is that our nation still is one where the freedom of the press is respected for the most part, but in most or many countries of the world it is not. By reporting on what you see and what you hear can get you not only in trouble but in jail and even worse than that. I guess the most of the Western countries, I assume Europe and also the eastern country of Japan, Far East, is that that we still have freedom of the press. Can you comment on freedom of the press?
Sure. I think it's still incredibly free. We like to say, even so, a great example of that would be when people write letters to the editor. We like to say, you know, please don't defame people or necessarily organizations, but with that, or threaten people, obviously. But with those exceptions, I think there is still incredible free speech in this country, and that someone simply writing into their newspaper can really speak their mind about almost any issue, with the exception of those three major points.
So you feel very good about the state of journalism currently.
I feel very good about it as far as freedom of speech. Like many people, I get the feeling that the country is more divided than ever, that maybe certain groups would like people to think that way. But, you know, for me, I'm in the business of news with your neighbors. And for the most part, when you're a member of a community, a functioning society, you have to get along with your neighbors, you know, especially in a town like Livingston with 8,000 people. Most people know each other.
Yeah.
So although maybe nationally we might be a little more divided or we might be a little more divided at the ballot box, I don't get the impression that freedom of speech is any more diminished than ever before. I think freedom of speech is still, that's what makes this country one of the greatest in the world. Freedom of speech still reigns.
It is so good to hear you expressing that sentiment. And we really concur that that's so significant and important. And we hope people will rejoice to hear that there are some journalists who feel that journalism is alive and well.
Yes, that's how I feel.
How would you urge the audience to think critically when they read something, when someone tells them something, to be able to evaluate it and come up with the best response?
I'd say, especially when you're reading a news source, look at the sources that are used. Is it one person saying all of this? You know, we like to pride ourselves when we do a story, a truly good story. It can't be done all the time, but that you have as many sources as possible. Get quotes from a diverse set of people that are closely associated with the issue. If you're reading a story and there's only one quote from one person that's not necessarily even directly associated, you should definitely question that knowledge base and maybe the accuracy and the perspective of that article. I would definitely recommend that.
Dan, when you write a story, how do you check out the authenticity? I mean, I guess, kind of fill us in on how you know that you can attempt to get to the truth.
Sure. A good example would be one of the articles that I'm most proud of that I wrote probably in the past 2 years that I've been in Montana. We got to cover, and you may have heard of it, I got to break a story regarding some National Guardsmen that were in a helicopter in the Big Timber area that allegedly landed that helicopter and took some elk antlers from a private rancher in the area. At the time, no one in the public discourse was really aware of this issue. This was something that was relegated to paperwork in a county courthouse, something that had been reported and something that was just really being discussed among ranchers in the area. I was able to interview the rancher, Linda McMullen, who this helicopter allegedly landed on her property, talk to her directly. So I'd say right off the bat, a direct source is the best place to start. So that was her land. I got to talk to her. I also got to pull the actual court records from the report and talk to law enforcement, local law enforcement. And so when charges were revealed, I was able to get the exact charges. So I'd say as far as journalists and people even gathering information, you want to get information from the direct source as close as possible. So even if that's paperwork, and that can be a little in the weeds sometimes, but that's kind of our job to make it more palatable, more digestible, to do that kind of work for the reader.
I did read that story. It was quite amazing. Very good work. And I love that you're saying we need to go to the source, because one thing in studying about journalism and news and the world platform is that misinformation is somewhat of a problem right now.
Yeah, I like to say to people when they say, well, I just learned this on Facebook or whatever, why would I read a newspaper? I say our job is really at this point, in this day and age, to combat the Facebook rumor mill, basically these gossip chains. A lot of the time they aren't kind to people, to neighbors, to local businesses. And I really think our job is to sift through some of that sometimes and really come up with that truth, that objective truth, without disparaging people and businesses necessarily, right? And I think that's the good thing about a newspaper is that we're above all of that. We don't use anger. We don't use praise necessarily even. It's really just what happened here.
So it's just trying to give a clear, honest picture of what you find following extensive research and checking, okay? So it is back to that idea of the reporter as the heroic searcher for truth, yes. Been whole movies done about that, Dan.
Oh, yeah. All the President's Men is probably my favorite movie, and I know a lot of other people in the industry love that.
Well, it's so very good to hear you talking so positively, because I think when we consider health and happiness that we've all taken refuge, that we could find the truth and that we could know what is actually going on around us. And so I must say it gives us a good perspective and great hope to hear you being so positive. And what would you say to young persons thinking about becoming a reporter or working to become one right now?
I'd say if you have that curiosity, that drive to discover new things, to be the first person sometimes to learn them, if you love people, if you love new conversations, if you love different people from different walks of life, this is for you. Also, if you can write with dispatch, with clarity, brevity, those skills come with the territory. If you have all those things, you would be an asset.
Thank you. I wonder, even after you've done your most deep research and checking, it still could happen that an error might occur. What do you do in the case that you find out, oh dear, I misstated that, I didn't know that I did? I mean, how do you approach if perhaps there was an error or misunderstanding?
Sure, and those things happen. I think more than a lot of other industries, where maybe you make a mistake and you can cover it up, or you tell your boss, "Hey, look, this thing happened." As a team, you can make those things go away. I think as a journalist, there is a lot of self accountability, and to an extent, you are reflective of your team and the newspaper itself. For me, both the newspapers I work for have been around for over 100 years. That is a very strong brand that you are representing. So when you do get something wrong, and we all do, you need to be able to put your ego aside, kind of fall on your sword and just admit it. We'll do corrections in the newspaper. And sometimes that even means telling your source, hey, I got this wrong. I'm sorry. And as journalists, while it's important to represent the public, we need to do well by our sources. So that's kind of the important part too, especially in small town news, is that over time, the true testament is do your sources still trust you? Do they still want to talk to you about different issues? And sometimes that means, being honest with them and saying, hey, look, I'll do better next time.
And I think nothing could give them more confidence than to know that you would own up if you'd made an error and make it right. And that we've all made mistakes, so we all understand how that is. But it's what you do with the mistakes. So thank you for your ethical principles there.
I think there are different kinds of writing, and it might be good to point out to the public listening. For example, I notice I can be looking at an article online, a news story, and there'll be something pop up that sounds very interesting. So I touch on it, and it goes into it makes you want to know, well, okay, what are they referring to? What is the answer to this very exciting question they've posed? And it will be many pages later before you find out the writing is giving all kinds of information, most of it interesting, but not getting to the point. And then, of course, there are pop-up ads, because it's a commercial kind of writing. The person is purposefully having you go through all of this in this stuff to get to the answer to the question that was posed at the beginning. And I see that is something I find. In fact, I won't touch on those stories anymore because I know what's going to happen. And also I notice, even with the advent of AI, that in many things I read online, there are grammatical problems, punctuation problems, bad grammar, spelling issues, and I'm surprised by that. Can you comment on any of that, on the different kinds?
Sure.
Yeah.
I guess to break that down, as far as headlines, one thing I like to tell people is, headlines are meant to be attention grabbers, although they should be accurate. If you see a headline, there's always more to the story. Hopefully you can read more. One thing in print journalism that we try to do is have strong leads. My editor, John Carroll, is a huge mentor to me, always told me from when I first got started that you really want to have the gist of your article in the first sentence, if you can. Especially the first two sentences. Just give people an idea of what they're about to read. Lay out the facts right there. And then if people want to read more, they can. Although sometimes there's more depth to a story, and we can't put everything in the first few sentences. We definitely try not to do that rigmarole like I know what you're talking about, where you see online some crazy statement in a headline, and then you read through a 10-page article, and you don't even get to the gist of what the headline was saying. We avoid that at all costs. As far as the AI issue, what I also like to tell people is that AI is an echo chamber. At the end of the day, it's just an advanced library where people that will select information for you, that will gather that information and consolidate it. It is a machine. It cannot experience things. It cannot experience new things. It only has what it can draw from, which is other work, other sources. So I think that's part of the issue with AI is that it inherently, because it cannot experience anything new, it cannot get out there and talk to someone, have an emotional, deep conversation with someone about something, that inherently it will always be inaccurate to a degree in that regard.
Very well said. And I love the way you talk about writing, that we need to be concise. I remember one pundit said about writing that you should tell them what you're going to tell them, and then tell them, and then tell them what you told them. And we, being more in the scientific world, are quite research-based, but I always followed that dictum that you should be straightforward and not belabor things and get right to the point, make your point, and then review your point.
Yes, I think that holds true to journalism as well.
Suzanne, as always, with our children, teaching them to write, called that the horse, the head, the body, and the tail, I believe.
Yeah. because I think reporters have a real in about providing clarity in writing. Was that hard for you to develop, Dan?
No, not necessarily. One of my favorite writers to read is Ernest Hemingway. He naturally is someone who, whether to, you know, almost to a fault, who just uses dispatch and complete brevity in his writing, who was a newspaper man. I definitely studied a lot of writers like that, although I can't claim to have anywhere near the level of brevity that Hemingway had. I just think sometimes it's slightly inherent. Not to say that during my first year there weren't times where I had to correct and, you know, say things with less words. You know, run on sentences don't do well in the newspaper industry. So that, you know, just little simple tweaks when you get involved in the industry that that you learn over time, and after a while it becomes habitual, and you hopefully form good habits.
And one of Hemingway's books, I believe, was about writing. And I love to read writers talking about the misery of trying to write and do it correctly and not be verbose or wordy. So I guess I would say, I imagine it's quite a struggle not to be wordy and go on and on and get right to the point. Have you gotten so good at that you can do it automatically, or do you still have to work at it, Dan?
Sure, I think it's always a work in progress. We're always improving, like anyone in any career. Hopefully the idea is that you become better over time. But I'd say one thing that is a little interesting is, if it's a topic, at least for me, that I'm very enthusiastic about, you need to have the recognition that other people might not be as interested in the finite workings of that topic that you are. So you have to be able to dissect that and take out the information that's a little more in the weeds. So I'd say that's actually one thing to beware of as a journalist is, hey, if you're really interested in this topic, you need to recognize that other people might not be just as interested in it as you are, and to separate the chaff from the wheat there.
Would you also differentiate between reporting and editorializing?
Yeah, so and definitely as far as what I do, reporting, you're really just conveying information in an interesting, entertaining, and hopefully informative way. Editorializing, I think sometimes borders more on opinion pieces, critiques and things like that. What I like to tell people, especially sources, when maybe they're a little nervous, is we're not gossip columnists. That's not our business. No one cares what I think about an issue. I'm not an expert on anything, actually. What people care about is, can I gather information that would be a lot more time consuming for them to gather and convey it in the way that they would want to read it?
Well said again. Yeah. And I find that writing properly, grammatically, and clearly is a difficult skill to learn. What would you say to young people? What are some of the best ways? You mentioned getting an English degree.
Yeah, I think an English degree is a great place to start, but more importantly, read. Read often, read a lot, read things you like. You'll pick up different stylistic cues from different authors, different people that you admire, and read print journalism. You know, read the Wall Street Journal, read the leaders in the industry, read the New York Times. You'll pick up more stylistic cues from habitual reading than you probably ever could in the classroom. The classroom is more for tweaking and honing inherent skill.
And I think that's such a sound advice, and I think it would behoove parents to start young with their children, like looking at the newspaper and saying to the child, here's a really neat story, and letting them know some of the good aspects of reading for news and information, and making it important and excellent for the children to look at a newspaper and to learn that way.
Yes, I agree. I think especially parents right now have a responsibility. A lot of people say, well, kids growing up don't even know what a newspaper is. Well, I think if you put that kind of content in front of a child that's appropriate, age-appropriate, that they will know what a newspaper is, and they'll view it as a valid source growing up and for the future. I think we definitely owe it to them.
And they'll see substantially correct writing and grammar and use of words, and so it also is a learning tool for them.
Definitely.
I noticed that in the world today, there is a certain group that wants to ban certain books. That's always been up and down in our society, book burning, or in the history of the world. What's your take on that?
Yeah, definitely. We've covered topics like that, even at the local level here in Livingston. Book bans have been going on for a long time in schools. I guess the way I'd respond to that question would be bringing up 1984. By George Orwell. That book has been banned for mentioning communism, but of course anyone who's read that book would not view it as depicting communism in any kind of a good way. So that's a great example. You're banning something that actually probably would turn people away from communism,
yeah.
Authoritarianism, but they won't know that if they can't read it.
Exactly, because the book delineates just how problematic it is. And so that's a wonderful example of book banning that's awry.
Yeah, I think sometimes, kind of like the headlines, people don't get past the title. People don't get past the content. I would challenge anybody who wants to ban a book to actually read it themselves.
Are you going to write a book?
I'd love to someday, but right now I'm too busy telling other people's stories, and I really enjoy doing that.
Any topic of interest that you would focus upon?
For me, the outdoors is just tops for me. I love reading John Krakauer, Hemingway, as I mentioned earlier. Just any kind of outdoor writing is really my thing, and although I'm not necessarily some skilled climber or even hiker in that regard, I just really love nature and living out here and working in the gateway to Yellowstone. I think there are so many interesting and beautiful stories to be told about the people who live out here.
There sure are. And are you thinking to write the great novels so many journalists do, or are you thinking more fictional or historical or just geographical? Some of my favorite books were written by journalists, as you know.
Sure, I would love to. One thing, and whether it's fiction or nonfiction, I'm not sure it matters. One thing that a lot of people say, and some of my professors in college said, I think it's come to the point where it's used very frequently, is that what you write has to be true, right? So even if it's fiction, did you live that yourself? Do you understand the person you're writing about? Well, I think those things are required in a book. For instance, Into Thin Air, I mean, John Krakauer was on that expedition. I mean, what better way to write about it than to be on it yourself, right? To be on that climbing
exactly.
trip yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Hemingway lived a lot of the things that he wrote about, so I'd say
yes.
To anybody, if you're going to write about something, and this is definitely what I consider if I were to ever write a book, is did I live it? Is it true? Or am I just stealing somebody else's experience, which is not what I'm interested in doing?
I'm finding myself at times getting frustrated by going through a series of books by Jean Owl. I love her writing, but what she does, which makes it so important, like about the cave bear and about all those ancient creatures and people, is that she has done an in-depth study of the ecology, of the environment, of the herbs, of the weather patterns, studying history. I don't see how she has written, was it four or five huge 800-page books that are so interesting.
And heavily researched. Everything she talks about is a true thing from our deep past. And so, like you're saying, you can't necessarily just make stuff up. You have to really prepare properly. Is that kind of where you are, Dan?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I meet people in every day, my every day, that are incredibly interesting people. But if I were to ever write a book concerning that content, I would want to make sure that it was something that I've lived and experienced myself. Because if you don't, you're going to misrepresent the topic. I'm not from Montana, so I'm not sure if anything I ever wrote would be about an actual homeborn Montanan, right? That's not my lived experience. I'm a newcomer.
But maybe something about journalism, now that you know intimately.
Yeah.
Well, I guess one of my big struggles with the journalistic world today comes back to misinformation and how do we determine who we can believe. How would you recommend people look at their information out there, and how can we determine what is good news, like you're speaking of, and what might not be?
Yeah, so some simple things I notice sometimes is, again, it kind of goes back to that closeness to the source. If you're seeing someone interviewed on TV or even in print news, although I think this is less common in print news, is if, you know, like, for instance, on TV, it'll say expert. Well, what are they an expert in? What are their qualifications? You know, a lot of the time we cite somebody, we'll actually get their full position and what company or what job they have. If they have a job that's dealing with that and a position that's dealing with the topic you're writing about, then I'd say they're a very good source. If you just name them as an expert, there's probably a reason for that. Likewise, if someone's interviewing someone and they say, well, they work for the government or they live in Washington, D.C., there's probably a reason they're being more generic.
Mm-hmm. I know the panel of international psychologists said that even if online fake news is relatively rare, false beliefs formed at least in part from exposure to misinformation are quite common. They've researched this and they claim that there's more misinformation in the environment than analyses might suggest, and that low prevalence does not mean that misinformation should be ignored, because it can have effects that impact broader society. And so, like you're saying, it's really important that we try to get at the roots of the sources that we're hearing and attending to.
For sure.
I know in my field of psychology, there's something we call cognitive distortions. And it's what people, many of us, I think it's almost an automatic, that these distortions can lead one into depression, anxiety, and other issues. And even without it being a mental health issue, one can do that, I assume, in your field. If it's out of context, for example, if someone only gets part of the information, and there's a way to spin or lean that information, that it comes out with a different ending than it was intended. And that's what I know. You've had training not to do that, and I bet you don't do it.
No, yeah, we just try to tell the story. You know, if someone asks you, how was your interaction with a friend or someone you know, you want to just tell what happened. Nobody cares if I like that person, if I don't like that person, if I care one way or another about the issue, let them figure that out for themselves.
Exactly. You're just going to present the data. I think data-driven might be where you are.
Yeah, that's correct. I'm very data-driven, and I'm very driven by my sources. I try to let my sources tell the story.
And you said that you make sure the sources are valid by looking at their past history. How do you determine a valid source, Dan?
Sure, I try to look at their proximity to the situation. If we're writing about an incident that occurred in town or a medical emergency, I mean, the best person to talk to would be the person that it happened to. After that, maybe the police that are responding, and then maybe someone who saw it happen. But you would not want to be talking to someone who heard it from somebody who heard it from somebody else. We're not interested in anything like that.
Yeah, and we've had an experience with witnessing something downtown in Bozeman that a lot of people saw something happen on the street, and later we had taken video of this incident, and so we let the police department know that if they had any questions, we had a video, and they asked us to come in and could they please take that phone and get that video. And so they were trying to get at the proper information that might have been misrepresented originally, but they were able to come full circle with the actual fact of what happened. And I think all of us as citizens should be willing to do what we can to help with truth finding, I guess you could call it.
Yeah, I agree. We owe it to ourselves to be good stewards of consuming reliable information.
So I think every time one gets a news story, at least as we view it on TV, there'll be someone standing with your iPhone or your Android taking pictures of it. So that's it. Or there's a doorbell camera or a camera at an industry across the street that seems to verify what actually happens. What's interesting, sometimes even that can be misleading, but usually not. We have so many ways of verifying nowadays that there seems to be always someone coming forth with a picture or a video.
Sure, yeah. Even AI can make videos, though, so yeah, I agree with you. I think visual information is great, but again, you want to make sure you know where it's coming from.
Well, also, Dan, we'd love you to talk about your newspaper there in Livingston, give people contact points, and tell us all about your newspaper.
Sure. So the Livingston Enterprise, we've been around for more than 100 years, since the 1800s, actually. And we're the leading local news provider in Livingston and Park County. We are owned by Adams Multimedia, which is the same company that owns the Bozeman Daily Chronicle. So one advantage that people would have in reading an Adams Multimedia newspaper, which they own many newspapers throughout Montana, is that we do have that information sharing. So if something happens in Bozeman that the Chronicle reporters think would be of interest to Livingston readers, they'll send that our way, and we can throw that in our newspaper. So it's almost more of a compilation of Montana stories. Although we're hyper-local, we can gather information from a variety of different sources, so I think that is our advantage over a purely siloed local news network. So while we have multiple newspapers every day online and twice weekly in print that are just chock full of local stories, we also have information that you might want to know about what's going on in maybe the town next door, the next town over, or what's going on with your neighbors or your friends in another place in Montana.
Wonderful. We love to come to Livingston. It's a very charming town with a stunning view of the mountains.
It's beautiful. We're right close to the gateway to Yellowstone, so we get a lot of what I like to call Yellowstone-style stories. They're those kind of stories that I think could only happen around here.
I assume, too, you have local advertisement, or is it more general than just local advertisement?
No, we definitely have local advertisement. I'd say that's very important also, is if you're a business owner and you're in a small town in Montana, look up your local newspaper. They could really use the advertising, and also it might surprise that business owner just how well it works. It's a great way to reach your audience more directly.
Do you have want ads and those old-fashioned kinds of ways that people can make their needs known or what they'd like to let neighbors know, maybe information about the garage sale down the street or Is it that neighborhood, see?
Sure, yeah. We still have classifieds, things like what you're describing, and we also have ads that local businesses will do a full-page ad or throw coupons in there, announce something that's going on with them. So it can be very, very diverse as far as the types of different advertising we have. And we still have obituaries, which are actually one of the more, I don't necessarily want to use the word popular, but they're one of the more locally sought pieces of information in the newspaper each week.
What about legal notices?
Yeah, we still have plenty of legal notices. Those are very important as well.
Do you have comic strips?
We do, and that's one that sometimes I find a little interesting. But yes, some of our readers love comics and sort of the entertainment stuff that we put in there, and crossword, things like that.
I used to look forward to the Sunday paper because it had many different sections. Anything like that?
Sure. I mean, you know, we like to say that we're hyper-local news, but that could be anything from one of our most popular articles within the past month was just kind of a public interest story, people recalling their relationship that they knew Robert Redford, who spent a good deal of time in the Livingston and Big Timber area. So it doesn't have to be necessarily, there's something for everyone. It doesn't have to be a court case or crime. I think that's one of the good things about a local newspaper is that it could be something, it could be a local connection to a celebrity. It could be one of your neighbors who just got an award, high school sports, anything like that. So there's something for everyone.
That's what I've always loved about the newspapers. Mm-hmm.
We have about 2 minutes. What have you not said that you want to say on this program?
I guess I just want to say that for people that might be listening that are in Livingston or Big Timber or other ads, multimedia newspapers, thank you for reading. If you're not currently a reader, I would strongly encourage you to find out what the local newspaper is in your town and hit that subscribe button. You're what allows us to do what we do every day and keep doing work that matters in the community.
Very good, very good. And we want to encourage young people to consider journalism and the continuity of keeping the press free, open, and true.
We'd like to thank you very much for being on the program today. We urge the audience to check out the Livingston paper, the Bozeman paper, and don't let journalism die. Of course, we're going to keep our iPhones and look up stories and all of that, but this has been a great program, very enlightening, and we appreciate you being here. Gallatin Valley, keep listening to Health and Happiness on Monday nights at 7, Thursday mornings at 9. Thank you again, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for having me.